Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
How many?
Speedball could barely stand still. That wasn't unusual. Ever since the accident in the lab, his body had become a barely controlled generator of highly volatile kinetic force bubbles. His teammates in the New Warriors were accustomed to his constant bouncing around, his inability to stay focused on anything for more than 90 seconds at a time.
Earth to Speedball. You gonna answer my question, kid?
Call me Robbie, Mr. Ashley.
You know the rules. When you're mic'd and in the field, it's code names only. Speedball.
Yes, sir.
So? The villains. How many?
Speedball leapt up into the air past Namorita, who stood leaning against a tree, bored. He bounced off Microbe's massive frame, the big guy sat sprawled on the grass, and came in for a featherlight landing right behind Night Thrasher, their black-cowled leader. Thrash was all business, his hidden eyes peering through a pair of high-tech binoculars. Speedball looked past him at the house, old and wood-framed, concealed from its neighbors by a high fence. The warriors and their camera crew stood about 50 feet away, hidden behind a pair of big oak trees. A trio of muscular men appeared in the doorway of the house, all dressed in casual clothes, jeans, work shirts. Speedball touched a button on his earpiece.
Three villains.
Four villains.
Speedball squinted, managed to make out a muscular woman with dark hair.
Oh, yeah. I see Coldheart in the back, empty in the trash. Empty in the trash. Man, these guys are hardcore.
Actually, they're all on the FBI's most wanted list. Cobalt Man, Speed Freak, Nitro, they all broke out of Rikers Island 3 months back. And they all got wrecked as long as your arm.
Microbe had shambled up behind them, all 350 pounds of him, dressed in green and white with a thick belt full of compartments.
What's up?
Thrasher motioned him to silence.
Coldheart fought Spider-Man a couple of times. And get this, Speed Freak almost took down the Hulk.
Thrasher lowered the binoculars.
He what now?
These guys sound out of our league.
Out of your league, maybe, Lardo.
Shut up, Ball.
I told you not to call me that.
Ball.
Enough! What's the plan?
Plan is you spend 5 more minutes in makeup, Nita. You think people want to see that big ugly zit on your chin?
Namorita shot him the finger and turned away. Namorita was a blue-skinned beauty, an offshoot of the royal family of Atlantis, cousin or niece or something to Prince Namor, ruler of the undersea city. One time, Speedball had tried to get into her pants. She'd held his head underwater for 5 minutes.
I don't know. I'm not sure we should do this.
What? Think of the ratings, Thrash. We're dying here. 6 months we've been driving around the country looking for goofballs to fight, and the best we've managed was a bum with a spray can and a wooden leg. This could be the episode that really puts the New Warriors on the map. We beat these clowns, and everyone will stop bitching about Nova leaving the show and going back into space.
Fernandez, the cameraman, stepped in.
I just want to remind everybody that the crew's on shift for about another 20 minutes. After that, we go to time and a half.
Okay. Listen up, everyone.
Thrasher held out a tablet computer, displaying profiles of the four villains.
Nitro and Cobalt Man are the real threats here. Coldheart's a hand-to-hand expert. We should take her out from a distance if possible.
Microbe leaned in until he was right next to Speedball's ear. Speedball pulled out his player and thumbed it on. Mercifully, it drowned out both Microbe's taunts and Thrasher's boring tactical briefing. Speedball was tired and cranky. They all were, he realized. It had been Thrasher's idea to turn the New Warriors into a reality show, and at the beginning, it seemed exciting. Times were tough for teenage heroes, and this was a chance to transform their frankly third-rate team into pop stars. The show enjoyed a brief spurt of attention, and Speedball became addicted to the public acclaim, the guest appearances on the talk shows. But then, Nova had quit, and the less said about his replacement to Bree, the better. She'd washed out after 2 episodes. As the season wore on, the strain of travel and constant reshoots had worn on all of their nerves, and the ratings took a sharp dive straight into the toilet. A second season looked really, really unlikely. It was too bad. When they started, they were all friends.
Ooh.
Nita elbowed him in the ribs.
What?
We've been marked.
Speedball looked over at the house, just as Coldheart turned to stare right at them. Then she ran inside.
It's a raid!
The warriors were on their feet. Fernandez hefted his camera, preparing to follow them. Speedball grinned and toggled to the show opening on his player. The show wasn't broadcast live, but the theme music in his ears always got him pumped.
Standard attack pattern, form on me!
Go! Speedball, Night Thrasher, Microbe, the sultry Namorita, and the man called Nova!
Speedball hated that part.
In a world of grays, there is still good and evil. There are still the New Warriors!
Speedball crashed into the front door, splintering it. The other warriors ran up behind him, surveying the scene. The living room was stripped bare, like a crack den. A long-haired man whirled to greet them, half clad in a metal exoskeleton.
Speed Freak! Holy crap!
Speed Freak reached for a silvery red-visored helmet. Grinning again, Speedball body slammed him, sending the helmet flying. They crashed together through the far wall into the backyard.
I'd heard that clothes make the man, Speed Freak, and in your case, it's totally true!
Fernandez tapped Speedball on the shoulder.
Sorry, the sound cut out for a minute there, bud. Any chance of that last part again?
Sure. Rita?
Namorita rolled her eyes and stalked over to the dazed Speed Freak. She lifted him easily up into the air.
Take two. In your case, Chuckles, it's totally true!
Got it.
Speedball looked around. Night Thrasher and Microbe had Coldheart and Cobalt Man cornered against the far fence. Cobalt was struggling to fasten his high-tech suit over his big frame, while Coldheart slashed her energy swords through the air, keeping the warriors at bay.
Wait a minute. I know you guys. You're those idiots from that reality show!
That's right, and this is reality.
Whoa, lame catchphrase, boss.
No way! I'm not getting taken down by Goldfish Girl and the Bondage Queen!
She sliced a crackling sword arc through the air, but Namorita was already inside Coldheart's defenses. She slammed a blue fist, hardened to withstand the ocean's depths, straight across the villainess's jaw.
Beg to differ, sweetheart.
Night Thrasher followed up with an acrobatic kick to Coldheart's stomach.
Can we, edit out the part where she called me the Bondage Queen?
Yeah, because Night Thrasher sounds so much straighter.
Coldheart was down, but where had Cobalt Man gone? And what the hell was Microbe doing just standing there in the corner of the lawn, his back to them? Surprisingly, the man-child stood over a writhing, subdued villain in an overcoat. Beneath the coat, an armored exoskeleton seemed to be dissolving away before their eyes.
Hey, guys! I got Cobalt Man! My bacterial powers are rusting his suit away! Guess I'm not such a loser after all, huh?
Learn to count, genius. Where's the fourth bad guy?
I'm on it.
Nita stopped, hovering in midair, and pointed out over the house toward the road beyond. She turned to soar up and over the roof. Thrasher and Microbe whirled back toward the house, through the hole in the wall, heading after Namorita. Speedball started to follow, then turned back. On the ground, Speed Freak tried to rise. After taking care of that, Speedball turned toward the house. Fernandez followed, shouldering his camera. Halfway through the living room, Speedball stopped in his tracks. Fernandez shot him a look.
You go on ahead.
Whatever.
Speedball took a long, careful look around the room. Beer cans were everywhere. On a folding table, pizza dripped and rotted. The one remaining slice soaking through a greasy box. A meth pipe still glowed, discarded on a pile of video game discs. Ancient paint cracked and peeled from the walls. Stuffing leaked from the old sofa.
This is where you end up.
When it all goes wrong. When things don't turn out the way you expect. When you make all the wrong decisions and end up running for your life. Speedball had peaked early during the fight. Now his adrenaline levels were crashing. He felt suddenly tired, useless, futile. He was glad the others weren't around. He'd expended a lot of energy keeping his bipolar condition a secret from them. He felt very unreal, as though he were watching his own actions from a distance, like some bored, faceless audience member just getting ready to change the channel.
Speedball! Kid, where are you? Do you want to miss the climax?
No, I don't want to miss it.
He bounded out through the shattered front door in a burst of kinetic energy. Across the road, a crowd of elementary school kids had gathered at the edge of a playground. Some of them held books, computers. One kid carried a baseball bat.
Get back, kids!
Night Thrasher and Microbe motioned firmly to the children, trying to herd them away. A small figure dashed across the street toward the school bus. A purple and blue costume, long silver hair, cruel eyes that looked like they'd seen and done terrible things. Nita crashed down onto him from above, slamming him into the bus, caving in its side. Window glass hailed down, covering both figures.
On your feet, Nitro.
Nemorita stood in full battle stance, arms upraised, legs planted firmly for the camera.
And don't try any of your stupid explosions, because that's only gonna make me hit you harder.
Speedball moved in to back her up. Nitro knelt, crouched on the pavement, leaning up against the dented bus. When he looked up, his eyes blazed with hate and deadly fire.
Nemorita, right?
Fernandez moved in, swinging the camera back and forth from Nitro to Nita. Nitro smiled, and his eyes glowed brighter.
I'm afraid I'm not one of those bargain basement losers you're used to, baby.
His whole body was glowing now. Nita took a step back. Microbe just stared, his mouth slack, eyes wide.
Speedball! Robbie! Help me get these kids out of here!
Kid, what's going on?
Speedball didn't move, didn't even nod. Once again, he felt like he was watching events, images, moving in a pre-recorded pattern on some high-def screen. Did any of this matter? If it all went wrong, if it didn't follow the right script, could they just do another take? Or was this the last, the only take? Nitro was a ball of fire now. Only his glaring eyes were visible.
You're playing with the big boys now.
The shockwave continued to spread outward, engulfing camera, cameraman, school bus, Night Thrasher, Microbe, the house, and the three villains sprawled in its backyard. The children. 859 residents of Stamford, Connecticut died that day. But Robbie Baldwin, the young hero called Speedball, never knew that. As Robbie's body boiled into vapor, as the kinetic energy inside him burst forth for the last time into the void, he was allowed one final thought.
At least I won't have to get old.
Graphic Audio presents Marvel Comics Civil War by Stuart Moore. Adapted from the graphic novel by Mark Miller and Steve McNiven. All characters, their distinctive likenesses, and related elements are trademarks of Marvel Comics. Copyright 2013. All rights reserved. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Richard Cutting, Tim Getman, James Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Jeff Allen, Julianne Elliott, Ken Jackson, Evan Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Danny Gavigan, Tracy Oliveira, Elliot Dash, Michael Glenn, Alyssa Wilmoth, Lily Beacon, Colleen Delaney, Karen Novak, Scott McCormick, Caleb Brown, Bradley Smith, Nora Ashrati, Sherry Berg, David Coyne, Christopher Sheeran, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Terrence Aselford, James Konacek, Alexander Strain, Casey Platt, Joel David Santner, Nanette Savard, David Harris, Michael John Casey, Yasmin Twazon, Patrick Busink, Casey Jones, Stephen Carpenter, Drew Kopas, Lily David, Dylan Lynch, and Damian Chop Richardson. Energy tingled across his skin, dancing along the millimeter-thick sheath covering his body. Wireless sensors reached out, touched matching circuits on boots, chest plate, leggings. Microprocessors winked to life. Armor plates snapped open, seeking out his body, locking into place, completing each circuit in turn. Gloves clicked onto fingers. The helmet came last, wafting easily into his hands. He lifted it onto his head and snapped the faceplate down. For the first light of dawn, Tony Stark rose up into the Manhattan sky. Avengers Tower dropped away below. Tony looked down, executed a vertical half turn. The Manhattan skyline spiraled into view, majestic and sprawling. To the north, Central Park lay like a green blanket on a bed of gray. Southward, the tall, tapering maze of Wall Street narrowed to a sharp point in the water. New York was home, and Tony loved it. A dozen indicator lights clamored for Tony's attention, but he ignored them.
Let's see, where should I go for breakfast this morning? The Cloisters. Quick jaunt to the Vineyard. Maybe a longer hop down to Boca.
No. Today he was restless. Today would be different.
Call Pepper Potts.
The call went straight to voicemail.
I'm ignoring you, Tony. Leave a message.
Cancel my morning. Thanks, doll.
Pepper was never off duty. She'd be acting on his instructions within minutes. Tony banked sideways, cast a quick glance down at Central Park. Then he fired up his boot jets, and the invincible Iron Man shot out across the city over the East River. The phone message's light was winking, but Tony couldn't deal with that yet. He clicked the autopilot on, making sure the special FAA notification beacon was activated. He soared over LaGuardia Airport, banked left, and blinked twice at the RSS feed. Before his eyes, a menu of headlines appeared. More economic trouble in the European Union. He'd have to double-check his holdings later. Another Mideast war looked ready to break out. Maybe as soon as today. Pepper had flagged a magazine feature on the Mexican subsidiary of Stark Enterprises. Tony would have to make sure Nunez, that division's COO, remembered the company's strict no-munitions policy. And the Senate Metahumans Investigations Committee was in the news again. That reminded Tony of another duty, so he clicked over to email. Scanned a couple hundred messages, charities, contracts, old friends, old supposed friends who wanted money, invitations, Avengers business, financial statements. There it was. Confirmation of his own testimony before the Metahumans Committee next week. That was an important one. There'd be no long-distance flight to blow off steam that day. The committee had been formed to investigate abuses of superhuman power and to recommend standards and regulations to govern the actions of metahumans. Like many congressional committees, it served largely to score political points for its members. But Tony had to admit that, as the world had grown more dangerous, superpowered beings had become less and less popular among civilians. As the highest-profile Avenger with a publicly known identity, Tony felt a special obligation to make sure both sides of the issue were heard. Soon Tony was out of the ocean. It was all just waves now, massive, rolling, a pure, endless display of natural power. The sight calmed Tony, focused him. Slowly, the real source of his anxiety rose to the surface of his mind.
Four.
The messenger from Asgard, home of the Norse gods, had appeared suddenly. 12 feet tall, massive and stern, hovering in a mist of smoky fog above Avengers Tower. Tony had greeted the messenger on the roof with Carol Danvers, the Avenger called Ms. Marvel, hovering just above. She floated tall and graceful, her body lithe and strong in flowing blue and red. Captain America stood on the roof in full uniform, alongside Tagra, the orange-furred Catwoman.
Ragnarok has come. I am sent to notify you of the Thunder God's fate. You will see him no more.
Tagra's eyes went wide with alarm. Captain America stepped forward.
We're ready. Just tell us where to go.
No, it is done. Ragnarok has come and passed, laying waste to all Asgard. Thor has fallen in battle. He is no more.
At those words, a terrible, sunken feeling had taken hold of Tony.
I am here out of respect for what he meant to you. But hear me. This is Father Odin's final message. From this day, there will be no further contact between Midgard and Asgard, between your realm and ours. Thor is dead. The Age of Gods is done.
And the messenger was gone. That was 4 weeks ago. Tony had grieved for Thor this past month. The Avengers had discussed their sorrow and also their frustration. After dozens, hundreds of battles together, their friend and comrade had apparently died alone in a war fought far away, on some other plane of existence entirely. Not only had the Avengers been powerless to help their friend, but they probably couldn't even have perceived the battle that took his life. Now, though, Tony began to realize that something else was nagging at him. Thor hadn't just been his friend. The Thunder God had been the linchpin, the very center of the Avengers. Tony and Cap were both strong-willed men, each with his own strengths and flaws. Cap was ruled by heart and instinct, Tony by a faith in the power of industry and technology. Several times since the founding of the team, they had almost come to blows over some matter of strategy or sacrifice, and each time, Thor had spoken up with that booming voice that left no room for argument. He'd remind them of their duties or laugh at their folly, and his sense of mirth always brought them together. Or else he would just walk up behind and clap both men on the back so hard it nearly fused Tony's armor to his skin. Tony had tried to reach out to Cap, but the super soldier had been very quiet these past weeks. Tony had a terrible feeling that Thor's death had driven some permanent wedge through the heart of the Avengers. Otherwise, things were going well. Stark Enterprises was flush with Homeland Security contracts, and if there was no one special woman in Tony's life right now, there were four or five incredibly hot ones. Overall, the last few years had been a very good time to be Tony Stark. And yet, he couldn't shake this dread, the feeling deep in his metal-sheathed heart that something profoundly horrible was about to happen.
Happy Hogan.
Morning, Hap.
Mr. Stark, you need me to pick you up?
Left upper arm microcontrollers experiencing failure. Do you wish to attempt diagnostic and self-repairs?
Yes.
Mr. Stark?
Not this morning, Happy. I don't think you could bring the car around where I am.
Another hotel room? Who is she this time?
Avengers Tower priority call.
Ring you later, Hap.
Those microcontrollers were trouble. Tony had always had trouble with microcircuitry. The smaller his work got, the more likely it was to misfire. He should consult someone about it. Maybe Bill Foster. Before he'd become the hero called Goliath, Foster had specialized in miniaturization.
Memo, call Bill Foster tomorrow.
Acknowledged.
Take priority call.
Would you like video?
Yes.
A nightmare apparition appeared before Tony, filling his field of vision. A glistening insect-like creature, gleaming metallic golden red, slim arms and legs crackling with electric power. Elongated gold lenses hid its eyes, lending it an air of inhuman malice. Its shape was vaguely human, except for the four additional metallic tentacles sprouting from its back, flicking back and forth in random, jerky motions.
Tony, you there?
Peter Parker.
Gave you a heart attack, huh? No. Sorry, not funny.
That's okay, Peter. I should recognize that suit. I built it, after all. Just never seen anyone actually wearing it before.
On Tony's video feed, Peter Parker, the Amazing Spider-Man, adopted a comical Vogue pose, metallic tentacles framing his face.
Well, what do you think?
It's you, baby.
Tony double-checked the call origination info. It was Avengers Tower, all right. That explained the video capability. It also gave him a good idea of why Peter had called.
Seriously, Tony. And you know me, I don't say seriously very often. This costume is da bomb.
If I were you, I wouldn't say that very often either.
Spider-Man tapped at the gold lenses.
What's in these things anyway?
Infrared and ultraviolet filters. Now, the earpiece has built-in fire police and emergency scanners. The mouth covering has carbon filters to keep out toxins. And there's a full GPS system built into the chest plate.
Whew. I'll never get lost in the West Village again. What's with those diagonal cross streets, anyway?
Tony called up a detailed dossier on Peter, quickly scanning it.
So, how's your aunt?
Better, thanks. That heart attack turned out to be minor.
Glad to hear it.
Tony, I'm grateful as hell to you. You know I am. That old cloth suit I sewed when I was 15, it was looking pretty ragged.
Well, I've also incorporated mesh webbing that should let you glide for short distances.
Tony...
The whole thing is made of heat-resistant Kevlar microfiber. Anything less than a medium-caliber shell won't even penetrate it.
Tony, I'm not sure if I can accept.
The suit is a gift, Peter.
I know. I mean the other thing.
I need you, Peter.
Believe me, I'm flattered. I haven't heard that from too many girls lately.
Well, you know, I might be able to help with that, too.
Tony, I just don't think I can replace a god.
So that was it. Tony paused, gathered his thoughts.
I've never been much of a joiner, either. I'm just a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. You guys operate on a whole other level.
Peter, there's a lot going on right now. Have you heard of the Senate Metahumans Investigations Committee?
No, but I already want to party with them.
They're mulling over a number of measures that will have profound effects on the way you and I live our lives. The age of the lone wolf is ending, Peter. The whole world is your neighborhood now. If you want to carry on saving lives, helping people, using your gifts for the betterment of mankind, you're going to need a support structure.
Spider-Man said nothing. His expression was unreadable behind the metal mesh facade.
I have a strong team in the Avengers. Cap, Tigra, Ms. Marvel, Hawkeye, the Falcon, Goliath. Even Luke Cage is starting to fit in. But there's no one else who thinks the way I do, who understands science and technology, and who always has one eye on the future.
All I do these days is worry about the future.
Peter, I'm not asking you to replace Thor. No one could do that. But I need your raw strength, and I need your sharp mind. You're a crucial part of Project Avenger now.
Full medical?
Better than that Obamacare you're on now.
Okay. Then I'm in.
Excellent. I'll be home in 3 hours. Celebratory drink at the tower, say, 2 p.m.?
A club soda, of course.
You know me well. Peter, I'm having a little satellite trouble. See you this afternoon.
Satellite trouble? Where are you, anyway?
You wouldn't believe me.
Everything okay?
Yeah, a little trouble with the new microcontrollers in my armor. Never mind. I'm fine.
Good. Well, thanks. Again.
We're going to do great things, Peter. Thank you.
Tony severed the connection. He was eager to get home now, to return to work, to set the next phase of his life into motion. Enlisting Peter into the Avengers had been a top priority. Tony genuinely liked the young man, and he hadn't been lying when he'd flattered Peter's scientific ability and quick mind. He found himself looking forward to mentoring Peter. But there was another factor he hadn't brought up. Tony wasn't just interested in Peter Parker, science prodigy. As Spider-Man, Peter was one of the most powerful metahumans currently roaming the planet. That made him a resource to be tapped, and a potential danger to be watched, too. Better to keep him close. Tony glanced down at the Pacific Ocean, watching as the tiny islands of Hawaii appeared. He slowed briefly, picturing himself on a hotel deck with a virgin colada in hand, beautiful women glistening as they splashed and strode from the water.
Nope, not today.
By the time Tony reached California, he had 8 voicemails from Pepper. Appointments, calls, contracts. The salt flats of Utah rushed by, then the beautiful snow-capped Colorado mountains. The bare plains of Kansas, the lush forests of Missouri. So beautiful, all of it. When the Appalachian Mountains rose into view, he dialed Happy.
Gonna need a pickup after all, Hap.
Suddenly, there was a rush of lights and alarms.
Clear all notifications. You still there, Happy?
Yeah, boss.
Stand by.
Tony called up the RSS feed. The incoming reports all seemed very confused, even panicked. Something about hundreds dead, a huge crater. Right in the middle of... He can make out Avengers Tower now, jutting up above the Manhattan skyline ahead.
Meet me at the tower, Happy. Fast as you...
Then his optical sensors picked up a column of smoke rising up into the air, over to the left, a couple miles north. No, farther away than that, past the city limits. 40 miles at least. A big column of smoke. Something horrible had happened.
Change of plans, Hap. Stand by for instructions. I'm changing course now to Stamford, Connecticut.
This is a hell of a first mission as an Avenger.
The smoke had thinned out now, but a dull artificial haze blanketed the whole city. The lenses in Spider-Man's new costume could probably analyze that fog's composition, but somehow he didn't really want to know. He knew he needed to be here, but Tony wasn't answering his calls. And as embarrassing as it sounded, he didn't know how to reach anyone else in the Avengers. So he'd hopped a ride on a northbound truck, and when traffic slowed to a stop, he'd hoofed it the last 3 miles. An Avengers Quinjet went by overhead, heading toward Ground Zero. Spider-Man raised his arm, shot a strand of webbing up to wrap around a lamppost, and set off after his new teammates. Half a mile out, a line of police barricades blocked the main road.
My God.
Beyond, Spider-Man saw devastation. Collapsed buildings, flashing emergency vehicles, shards of cloth wafting down rubble-strewn streets. Cops managing frantic civilians, desperate for news of their loved ones. Just outside the barricade, a small crowd had gathered, pointing upward. An old 4-story library building, topped with an ornate cupola, creaked and tottered. Spider-Man focused his lenses and spotted the cause, a shard of concrete projecting from one wall, apparently flung there from all the way inside the disaster zone. But that wasn't what the crowd was staring at. Along the side of the cupola, near the top of the building, crept the deep red form of Daredevil, the man without fear. Spider-Man tensed and leapt. He almost overshot. The muscle augmenters in the new suit had kicked in automatically, but he pivoted in midair and in less than a second touched down softly on the outer wall. His fingers clung easily, spider-style, to the brick facade. If Daredevil was startled, he didn't show it. His radar sense had probably warned him.
Peter, is that you?
In the flesh, Matt.
Spider-Man tapped a finger against his metallic eye lens.
And, steel, I guess.
Beneath him, the building lurched.
There's a kid trapped inside. Back me up.
Always.
Daredevil grabbed at a window latch, tried to pull it open.
I got it.
Concentrating, Spider-Man reached out with one of the tentacles protruding from his costume's back.
Where'd you get the suit?
Fella named Anthony Stark built it for me. Perhaps you've heard of him?
Daredevil frowned, his mouth grim beneath his red cowl. Then he turned and dove into the building. Spider-Man shrugged and followed. The office was bare, quiet. No power. Computers sat dark on a pair of paper-strewn desks.
You know where this kid is?
But Daredevil was concentrating, sending his radar sense fanning out through the floor. He pointed toward the door.
Matt, how you doing anyway? I know that whole identity thing's been a strain for you.
Daredevil didn't answer right away. 6 months ago, a tabloid paper with organized crime connections had outed his secret identity, revealing him publicly as Matt Murdock, crusading attorney. This had led to a flood of civil suits and public harassment. Matt had made the risky decision to deny everything, to publicly swear he was not Daredevil, which of course was a lie. Spider-Man wasn't sure he agreed with his friend's decision, but Matt had made a persuasive case that it was his only workable option.
I'm all right. Over there.
In a room full of cubicles, a 7-year-old girl sat cowering on the floor against a barrier. The building lurched. Then the girl saw Spider-Man.
Guess not everyone's into the new look.
Let me get this one.
5 minutes later, they were back down on the ground. Daredevil had handed the girl over to her mother, while a brace of cops watched carefully. The woman cast suspicious eyes across Daredevil and Spider-Man, then turned and hurried away.
That's gratitude.
Do you blame her after what happened today?
But I don't know what happened today.
It's bad, Peter, for all of us.
Can I get a tiny little clue here?
I'm talking about the Superhuman Registration Act.
Say what?
Daredevil shot a look upward, and Spider-Man followed his gaze. The red and gold figure of Iron Man streaked by, headed for Ground Zero.
Ask your new BFF.
When Spider-Man looked down, Matt was gone. Swinging over the barricade, it proved no problem. The Stanford police had more than enough to deal with today. Inside the barricade, the streets had turned quickly to chaos. Some houses had collapsed inward, others lay fallen under piles of rubble. Emergency crews bustled all around, transferring the dead and injured to ambulances, or where the roads were too rough, to hastily outfitted jeeps. And the sky was filled with ash, with a gray haze. The sun shone through weakly, casting no shadows, a dull red orb barely visible through the cloud of dust. The Falcon, a muscular black man costumed in red and white, fluttered downward a block away. Spidey followed his descent and spotted Captain America in full costume speaking with a couple of medics. Cap and the Falcon had been partners off and on for years. They exchanged a few terse words, Spider-Man was too far away to hear, and then set off at a run toward a still-smoking house.
Cap!
Captain America turned, squinted at Spider-Man, and flashed him a quick frown. Then he turned and resumed course for the burning building.
What was that about?
He raised his hand to fire off a web line, planning to follow Cap and the Falcon.
Hey, you an Avenger?
A rescue worker had lowered his breathing mask. He looked exhausted.
Yeah, I guess I am.
We could use some help.
He pointed to a collapsed pile of stone, the remains of an old city administrative building.
Motion detectors are picking something up 20 feet down, but we don't got our diggers here yet.
I got it.
Spider-Man leapt through the air.
Clear a little space, guys.
Time to give his new suit a workout. And then he was digging, using his tentacles to clear away stone and mortar, the splintered remains of desks, walls, collapsed ceilings. He reached ground level and kept burrowing, down into the building's basement, then its sub-basement. Climbing down carefully, he steadied himself with web braces and swept the tentacles around to clear debris and punch through layers of flooring. In the old days, he would have had to do this the hard way, lifting ceilings with his webbing and forcing his way through blocked passageways using muscle power alone. This seemed easier, more natural even. Almost before Spider-Man knew it, the rescue workers had followed him down on grappling ropes. When they located all five survivors, they rigged up rescue pulleys and began lifting the injured out. The civilians had inhaled a lot of dust. One had a broken leg, but they would all survive. Peter crawled back up to ground level. And two other figures were applauding with the rescue workers. Tigra, the cat-like werewoman, and Luke Cage, Power Man. Tigra reached out her arms and half-hugged, half-hoisted Spider-Man up out of the building. Her furry body was warm and muscular. Her bikini costume barely covered her at all. She held Spidey close, just a little too long.
Welcome to the Avengers.
She smiled, running flirty eyes down Spider-Man's thin frame.
About time we got some hot guys in this group.
Thanks. Wish it was under less horrifically apocalyptic circumstances.
You know, the Avengers saved my life. After my transformation, Cap and Iron Man... If I hadn't had this team for support, I don't know what would have happened to me.
Cage, a working-class hero from Harlem, wore dirty jeans, a black muscle shirt, and shades that hid his eyes. His dark face was covered with dirt and soot.
Good to see you, man.
Likewise. How about you? Being an Avenger, I mean. Has it been good for you?
Only been a couple months. This was prison. I wouldn't even be eligible for parole yet.
He lowered his shades, peered closer at Spider-Man.
Interesting threads.
It's a Tony Stark designer original. They'll be selling in the stores this fall.
Come on. Let's see if we can help Cap out.
Tigra set off on all fours, picking her way over down stoplights, across fallen telephone poles. Cage gave Spider-Man a quick nod, and together they followed. Straight ahead, a single freestanding brick building still raged with fire. Goliath, the latest in a long line of size-changing heroes, stood 20 feet high, picking debris off the roof. He reached down and grabbed a loose chunk of tar. He threw it high into the air, and Ms. Marvel swooped down under it. She fired off a blast of radiant energy, incinerating the roof chunk instantly.
Is that a firehouse on fire?
Former firehouse.
Falcon swooped in for a landing in front of them.
Now it's condos. Well, now it's a disaster area.
Cage stepped forward, giving Falcon a half hug. The two had grown up in the same neighborhood.
Cap's inside.
Straight up. Said to hang tight out here.
A middle-aged man stumbled out of the building and dropped to his knees. Falcon rose up into the air and whistled, and a pair of medics came running.
Got two kids here!
Hawkeye, the marksman, followed the man out of the building, balancing two small children on his wiry arms. His purple costume was singed and torn. One of his quiver straps had been burned clear away.
We got
Hawkeye deposited the kids in the medic's hands and staggered. Above, Goliath picked another piece off the roof.
That's fire. It's still burning.
Falcon landed next to Hawkeye and led him over to the others.
Good work, Hawk. Where's Cap? Still inside. I thought we got everybody, but he said... he insisted. You ought to see the medics, too. And miss this mook's hazing? No way. Welcome to the Avengers, Webs.
For once, Spider-Man found himself lost for words. He stood for a long moment. Then an explosion burst forth from the firehouse. Flames flared out the door.
Cap!
Then a figure appeared in the doorway, silhouetted against the raging fire. A tall, muscular man in a tattered red, white, and blue uniform. Captain America, the living legend of World War II, took one careful step after another out of the inferno, carrying an unconscious woman in his strong arms. Medics swarmed around him and took his burden from him.
Third-degree burns, but she's still alive. Get her into the Jeep.
Cap! Cage, Falcon, and Hawkeye followed Tigra toward the building.
I'm fine.
Cap waved them off. He smiled at Falcon, clapped Hawkeye on the back, and rested a steadying arm on Tigra's slim frame.
Spider-Man's just arrived. It's his first mission as an Avenger.
Then he turned towards Spider-Man, and his face turned dark.
Not the look I was expecting.
Cap held out his hand. Spider-Man took it, unsure, and felt Cap's strong grip as they shook. Behind them, a fire engine finally pulled up. Firemen unrolled hoses and began aiming them at the burning building. Cap held Spider-Man's hand for a long moment. Cage and Falcon exchanged a look.
Okay.
Hawkeye rubbed his neck, uncomfortable. Beneath his mask, Peter Parker frowned. He felt like he was back in high school, fidgeting under thick glasses while some popular kid stared him down.
I should check in with Tony. Anybody know where he is? Holy mother.
When Spider-Man reached the crater, he realized the true extent of the devastation. An area covering 1.5 city blocks had been totally flattened, reduced to ash and hard-packed dirt. Half a school building stood at the edge of the blast zone. Its other half had been incinerated, fallen off into the dead hard ground of the crater itself. The Avengers Quinjet sat parked in the bowl-like depression, alongside the Fantastic Four's custom-built plane. The haze was thicker here, seeming to shroud the crater in an eerie midday twilight.
Boss!
Iron Man held up a hand to Spider-Man, gesturing, "Wait a minute." Tony was with Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic of the FF. Reed had assembled a makeshift network of laptops, Wi-Fi nodes, and sensory detectors right in the dead center of the crater.
Where do you want this thing, Stretch?
Ben Grimm, the Thing, strained his orange rock biceps to lift a massive computer system out of the plane. Reed pointed. The other members of the FF stood watching them. Sue Richards, Reed's wife, known as the Invisible Woman, and her brother, Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. Johnny's eyes were wide. He almost seemed in shock. A sudden motion caught Spider-Man's eye. He turned to see Wolverine, crouched down over by the crater's far lip. He seemed to be sniffing the air. Reed peered into a screen.
I think that's all the survivors. There weren't too many this close to the blast.
What? What caused this?
The new Warriors. I just watched the footage. It was broadcast remotely to their studio. In the name of ratings, they tried to take down a gang of villains way above their power level.
Well, they paid for it. I read no survivors in the blast zone.
Wolverine chipped in from nearby.
I confirm that. There's no scent of anyone still living.
Not even Nitro? He set off the explosion.
What kind of crook blows himself up, knowing he'll die along with his victims? Do we have suicide bomber supervillains now?
Tony turned glowing eye slits towards Spider-Man for the first time.
If I could ask him, I would. But that doesn't seem to be an option.
Kids.
Johnny held up a shred of blue and gold cloth, a tiny piece of Speedball's costume.
They were just kids.
Spider-Man crossed to Johnny and laid a hand on his old friend's shoulder.
Matchstick. You okay?
Johnny shrugged him off. He took off, wordless, into the gray-fogged sky. Sue turned toward the FF's plane.
I'll follow him, make sure he's okay. You can catch a ride home, Reed?
Sure.
Reed, I'm gonna need all the data you can assemble. The Senate hearing is next week. This is the worst possible time for a disaster like this.
Tony!
But Iron Man was already in flight, arcing up and out of the crater. Unsure what to do next, Spider-Man followed at a slight distance. Captain America stood just outside the crater, watching the last of the casualties being loaded into an ambulance. Tony touched down next to him.
Cap.
All these children, Tony. The FEMA chief said there could be as many as 900 casualties. All for a TV show.
They should have called us. The New Warriors, I mean. Night Thresher knew they were out of their league.
Cap stared at him for a moment, then turned and strode quickly over to an ambulance.
Tony, I'm at your service. Tell me what to do.
There's nothing to do, Peter. I mean, Spider-Man. Get your best black suit out of the closet and prepare to be respectful. We've got funerals to attend.
But
this isn't a crime to be solved, or an adventure, or a villain to be fought. It's just a tragedy.
Or an opportunity. Right, bub?
Wolverine had silently crept up behind them. His expression was hostile, but not with animal savagery. This was something deeper, more personal.
You're heading for Washington soon, right? To talk to Congress about the state of superhumans in this country.
That's right, Logan.
Well, I don't give a rat's whisker what you do with these clowns.
He gestured up at Falcon and Ms. Marvel, hovering just above.
But I got a message from the X-Men. We're neutral. The mutant community's staying out of this crap.
You're also an Avenger, Logan.
Tony stepped toward Wolverine, repulsors glowing. Immediately, the mutant fell backward into a defensive crouch. Unbreakable claws burst forth from his hands, stopping half an inch from Iron Man's chest plate. Behind Tony, the other Avengers had gathered. Goliath, Cage, Hawkeye, Tigra crouched low. Captain America stood off in the distance, over by the ambulance. Tony rose up a few inches off the ground and stared down at Wolverine like a god.
Maybe you should just take lead from the Avengers.
Way ahead of you, boss.
Watch your step, Logan.
You think about coming after me, Tone? You better watch more than your step.
Then he took off like a wild animal, loping away at incredible speed. The Avengers looked around awkwardly, watching as the last of the rescue vehicles departed.
Tony, what are you going to say to the committee?
Tony Stark made no reply. He just stood staring out over the crater as the black ray mist slowly faded to reveal a low setting sun. Spider-Man stood with him, with his new teammates. He was an Avenger now. This was supposed to be his new beginning. But for 900 residents of Stamford, Connecticut...
It's the end.
Tony turned sharply toward him. For a moment, Spider-Man had the crazy idea that Tony was about to snap at him. But the armored Avenger just looked upward, activated his boot jets, and took off into the blood-red sky. From outside, the Blazer Club didn't look like much. Just a greasy glass double door and small velvet rope projecting out into the sidewalk. An old-style movie marquee with plastic letters spelled out, "Tonight, Acts of Vengeance." The bouncer looked Sue Richards up and down, from her flat shoes to her old jeans to her bob haircut. His eyes were hidden behind thick shades, but his mouth betrayed a slight smirk. He didn't even bother to shake his head. Sue stepped back into the crowd. Inside and out, Blazer was a bit more L.A. than most New York clubs. Maybe that was why Johnny Storms, Sue's brother, liked it so much. Sue clenched her fists. She'd been hunting for Johnny all afternoon, and these were the only civilian clothes she'd had stored in the plane. If she didn't look fabulous enough for the Blazer Club, that was their problem. She closed her eyes, concentrated, and vanished from sight. Susan Richards, the invisible woman, strode back up to the doorway and stepped easily around the rope. Blazer's main hall was enormous, at least half the size of a football field. Low lighting, 40-foot walls rising up to a vaulted ceiling. Colorfully garbed people danced casually or stood in clumps. Men in suits, rich kids, lingerie and fetish models cast painted eyes around for the right agent, the right photographer. Sue pushed her way through the throng of humanity, keeping herself invisible for now. Johnny had taken the Stamford disaster harder than anyone else. He'd always been an emotional kid, and the death toll had shaken all of them. But Sue realized something else. Johnny was closer in age to the new Warriors than just about anyone else on the scene today. And Johnny had made plenty of mistakes in his own life. Sue's thoughts turned suddenly to her own past. She could have been an Olympic swimmer. When she was 15, she used to practice every day. Even past the prelims, she was on her way. But she gave it up when her dad stopped trying. She gave it up to take care of her little brother. Years later, she was still taking care of him. Johnny wasn't the sort to mope around when he felt bad. He went looking for trouble. Across the room, a freestanding metal staircase led up to a platform and a door set halfway up the wall. A bright orange flame flared up from the platform and the crowd up there shrank back.
Johnny!
Sue pushed her way through the crowd.
Johnny! Johnny!
But the room was too noisy. When she reached the base of the staircase, she could see Johnny standing before the door, waving a flaming hand down at the crowd. Some of them seemed impressed. Others were, well, it was hard to tell. A trashy blonde hung on Johnny's arm, gesturing drunkenly. At the top of the staircase, a bouncer swung open the door.
VIP room, Mr. Storm. Harris and Lindsay are waiting.
Thanks, Chico.
Johnny pulled out a fiver and accidentally set it aflame.
Sorry. Wait. Here you go.
Sue moved toward the staircase, but a big woman in a tight backless dress blocked her way.
How come that loser gets into the VIP room?
Johnny paused at the door and turned slowly around.
Tell you what, gorgeous. Next time you save the world from Galactus, you can borrow my pass.
How about the next time you blow up a school?
The woman's companion, a trim man in an all-black shirt, laid a hand around her shoulders.
Yeah, jackass! How about the next time you kill some innocent kids?
Johnny tottered drunkenly, took a step toward the edge of the staircase.
What the hell are you talking about, hipster?
The bouncer watched, eyes narrowing. Johnny's date let go of his arm, looking worried.
Look, I mean...
Man, you got some nerve swaggering around town after that! I was you, I'd be ashamed to go outside.
Hey, shut your cake, old tubby. I got nothing to do with speedball or the new Warriors. Those guys are strictly C-list.
Baby killer!
Everything happened very fast then. Sue reached out with her force field, clearing a path up the metal staircase. People stumbled up against the railings. When Sue got to the top, Johnny was lying on the platform floor, his hands wrapped around his bloody head. The tight dress woman stood over him, face twisted with hate, a broken bottle clutched in her fist.
Everybody get back!
The bouncer stood at the edge of the platform, warning people away. Johnny's date disappeared into the VIP room. Sue charged tight dress, projecting invisible force from her hands. She lifted up with her force field, pushed the woman over the rail, and watched as she fell into the crowd of humanity below. Johnny was rolling around, writhing, blood dripping down his forehead. More patrons were rushing the staircase now, furious. Bouncers closed in, trying to stop the human tide. But the clubgoers kept advancing. As they got to the top of the stairs, Sue crouched down next to her brother and reached out, surrounding them both with an impenetrable force field. The first two attackers bounced off hard, tumbling back into the wave behind them. Johnny wasn't moving now.
Call my brother an ambulance!
First of all, I'd like to thank you all for coming. It means a lot to me, and most of all to your friends, neighbors, and family who lost loved ones in yesterday's utterly avoidable tragedy. At times like this...
Tony Stark looked down at the screen of his smartphone. Subject, Henry Pym. Aliases, Ant-Man, Giant Man, Yellow Jacket. Group affiliation, Avengers, Former. Powers, assorted size-changing abilities, flight, stinger weapons. Power type, artificial. Current location, New York, New York. Tony called up the on-screen keyboard, jotted a note. Retired, harmless. Subject, Robert Reynolds. Aliases, Sentry. Group affiliation, Avengers, occasional. Powers, extreme strength, invulnerability, and unknown other capabilities. Power type, inborn. Current location, unknown. Tony frowned, wrote, potential trouble. Find and recruit. At the front of the church, the minister looked down, removing his glasses.
That said, in our grief...
Subject, Robert Bruce Banner. Aliases, the Hulk. Group affiliation, none. Powers, anger-fueled strength. No measurable limit. Current location, exiled to deep space. Tony frowned. The church was huge, with several hundred pews, but every one of them was filled today. Old people and young, men and women. Every one of them dressed in mourning black. Tony sat 5 rows from the front, his mind racing. He hadn't slept last night. Since the incident, he'd slipped into overdrive, the way he did when confronted by a sticky engineering problem. His subconscious whirled around and around, tackling the situation from 1,000 different angles.
And so, we asked
so many heroes, hundreds of them, and who knew how many villains. Tony already kept dossiers on most of them, but now he found himself compulsively updating the entries. There was a lot of power here. A lot of potential nitros.
Mercy. Not only for the
a news alert icon flashed in the corner of Tony's phone. Casting a brief, guilty glance around, he slipped on his earbuds. A bald man appeared on the phone screen, behind a cable news logo.
Like Speedball, for example. Nobody likes to speak ill of the dead, but here was a boy who, by all accounts, couldn't even name the President of the United States. Shouldn't a kid like that be tested before he's allowed to work in our communities?
Tony frowned, clicked to another channel. The screen filled with a close-up of Johnny Storm's bloody unconscious face as he was loaded into an ambulance.
Details in the brutal assault on Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, last evening. This, the latest in a series of attacks on New York's super community. More on the hour, plus the growing pressure on the president as the people of Stamford ask, what are his proposals for superhero reform?
A ban on superheroes?
She-Hulk leaned forward and removed her glasses.
Well, in a world full of supervillains, that's obviously impossible, Pierce. But training them and making them carry badges? Yes, I think that's a reasonable response.
Well, don't you think you are particularly...
Tony felt a prickling on his neck and looked up suddenly. The two women next to him were glaring at him through their veils. Tony yanked off the earbuds, slipped the phone into his pocket.
Sorry.
Then he noticed the other set of eyes boring into him, from the end of the row. Captain America. When the service ended, Tony beelined for the door. People were already gathering together, weeping and comforting each other. Tony had no desire to intrude on their grief. Several other Avengers, including Tigra and Ms. Marvel, had wanted to come, but they'd all agreed it was best to keep the superhuman contingent as small as possible. No one wanted to turn the people of Stamford's grief into a media circus. Just outside the door, Tony felt a hand on his shoulder. He turned to see Peter Parker, smiling sheepishly.
Boss?
Peter, I thought we agreed Cap and I were going to represent the Avengers.
Who's an Avenger? You're looking at a humble photojournalist from the Daily Bugle.
Tony smiled despite himself. The black suit looked good on Peter, but those shoes were scuffed. And brown. Baby steps. This one was a project.
Besides, I just wanted to be here.
The church's driveway was small and curved, on the edge of an open field. Cars clogged its full length, pulling up one at a time to pick up the oldest mourners. Down the line, Tony spotted Happy Hogan leaning against the limo.
Walk with me, Peter.
Peter fell in beside Tony. They passed the minister, who stood comforting a pair of grieving widows. Captain America stood off to the side, solemnly shaking hands with a pair of firemen. The minister raised his head and locked eyes briefly with Tony. Tony looked away.
I feel like I should be taking pictures.
That part of your life is over. No more scrambling for rent money.
You mean I'm part of the 1% now?
Tony touched the boy's shoulder.
Things are about to happen fast, Peter. I'm glad you're with me.
Things? Like the Superhuman Registration Act.
Not many people have heard that phrase yet.
But it's why you're going to Washington next week, right?
Tonight, actually. The committee has moved up their timetable in light of this.
He gestured, taking in the church and the mourners.
The president has asked to meet with me this evening, and the hearings take place tomorrow.
What would it mean, this act?
Well, all metahumans would be required to undergo registration and training in order to practice their gifts in public. It also gives the government extremely broad powers of enforcement. Broader, even, than anything the Senate was considering before.
And you support it?
Yeah. It's a tricky piece of legislation. If it's enacted into law, it would have to be administered with great wisdom, great care.
Tony Stark?
Tony turned around.
You should be ashamed!
Ma'am, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Leave what? My own son's funeral? He's the one you should be dragging away!
Please. Ma'am, I appreciate that you're upset, but the New Warrior's tragic actions had nothing to do with me.
Oh, yeah? Who finances the Avengers? Who's been telling kids for years that they can live outside the law? As long as they're wearing tights.
I don't think Mr. Stark says that.
Cops have to train and carry badges, but that's too boring for Tony Stark. All you need are some powers and a badass attitude, and bang! You've got a place in Joe Billionaire's private super gang.
Tony opened his mouth to speak, and then something happened that had only happened once before. His mind went utterly, completely blank. He realized she was right.
Jerome left me. When they took away his pension, he just couldn't take the pressure. All I had left was my little Damien. And now...
I'm sorry. Hap, let's go.
You, Stark!
She stabbed a finger at Tony's back as he walked away.
You fund this sickness with your billions! My Damien's blood is... It's on your hands! Now! Now and forever!
Well, that was fun. And only a little scary.
They're the scared ones. They grew up thinking they'd have jobs, pensions, a few bucks to spend in their old age. Now they're terrified. Can you blame them?
Maybe you could give them a few bucks.
Maybe I can do more than that.
Happy yanked open the limo door. Tony paused for a moment, fixed his gaze on Peter's questioning eyes.
I can make them safe.
Peter nodded slowly, understanding passed between them. And suddenly, Tony was alone. Alone in the dark, quiet limo, walled off by metal and glass from the sea of grief outside.
Just a billionaire and his private thoughts. Dark and heavy.
Home, boss?
Straight to the airport, Hap.
Tony peered out the tinted window at the dark-suited mourners.
I know what I have to do.